You're listening to the Furlan Bros Tech Podcast, episode 143, A Dynamic Perspective on Slinging Yo.
Welcome to episode 143 of the Furlan Bros Tech Podcast. Today is June the 22nd, 2014. I'm Matthew Dean Furlow, and this is my game time brother, for the first time in full definition, James Furlow.
You know what? And I watched today's game in full definition because I'm now on Comcast and can now watch soccer games. I get ESPN3 access, so I watched the game today.
The real question is, do you get ESPN the Ocho?
The Ocho. Seriously, man. Get some dodgeball. Dodgeball! Yeah. Yeah, no, but I got soccer. Love it and hate it. I got it.
Yeah, that was about as painful as it could have been.
Which, I like the guy in the studio goes, dude, you were down 1-0. You should be happy with the point. I'm like, no. No.
Yeah, no. No, we were up with 35 seconds to go. We were winning. We had won.
Yeah, the announcer had set my expectations for 4 minutes, and they did 5. Somewhere they cheated.
Oh well, did you not see them hold up the big sign that said 5?
Oh no, I saw that. I saw that. But the announcer was like, "Oh, they must have changed something." Which I was like, well, "Yeah, the U.S. was taking their time at the end, so they penalized us." And
yeah,
and the worst part was, the assist was by Ronaldo, who laid an egg the entire game. So my working hypothesis is he just got lucky. He's not actually good. Yeah. He did nothing to prove that to me, but yeah, that was frustrating.
Yeah, that was brutal, James. That was brutal.
But I got to watch it, and that's a win in my book.
Hey, so, yeah.
And there's still a 76% chance that the U.S. gets out. So you know, it's just not 100% anymore.
Yeah. That was the part that killed me. It's like, you know, I am glad we tied. I'm glad we're still in the running. I'm glad blah, 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 blah. But it's like, it's just that Germany's up next. Except I guess Germany, you know, they tied
Ghana,
the guys a week bigger. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
They tied the Ghanaians.
You're so mean.
But...
so mean. I love it.
So we already beat them. Why rub it in? But yeah, that is a my goodness.
Which I mean, Portugal is a number 4 ranked team. They're not bad. You know, so whatever. Yeah. Whatever. But we had to win, which not important. The important part is I got fast internet. I got to watch the game. Life is good. Jesse's like, "So does this mean I can stream Netflix while you're doing your podcast?" And like, "Well, maybe. We'll see."
Yeah. Do you mind sharing what your up down time is?
Oh. Here, let me here, I'll tell you real quick.
Can't speed tested during a video conference?
Sure I can. I'll tell you my free bandwidth. I'll tell you what I'm paying for, and then we'll see what I'm actually getting during the middle of a podcast here.
Okay.
So I'm paying for 25.
Okay. That's not bad.
Down. So the up's got to be, what, 10-ish? I'm getting 26, 27 right now.
Holy cowabunga. That's, you know, I bet you could do Netflix on that.
Probably.
Of course.
She probably will have to not do the auto thing. But
yeah.
I don't know if she can just choose. Yeah, 28.22.
That's not bad at all.
That's not bad. And then my upload is... my upload's less, and that's not a surprise. That's sitting at like 5 right now.
Yeah.
Because of what we're doing. Well, but it's all good, man.
Right.
How about you? You're back. Welcome back.
It's all good, man. I'm back. Yeah, thank you. I'm back in America.
Are you sleeping
yet?
I
had my first full... What?
Oh, you're about to... I asked if you were sleeping yet. I think you were just about to answer that.
I had my first full night of sleep last night. Friday, it was brutal, man. It was brutal. I had like a... The first night, I was super tired because of the plane, so I actually slept somewhat normal. Wednesday night to Thursday morning. Thursday night to Friday morning, I slept pretty rough. Like, it was pretty rough. I actually slept through the first hour of work, and my boss, like, called me at 9 a.m. and he was like, "I would let you stay home today, but we actually have stuff that needs to get done today." I was like, no, I totally get it. So I showed up. And I got home from work and I was like, okay, on Friday afternoon, I was like, okay, I'm going to take an hour nap, which is enough to just get me over the hump. I'll stay up till like midnight, maybe 1 o'clock, go back to sleep. It's Saturday morning. I'll just wake up whenever I wake up and not worry about it.
And, oh, that was a mistake.
Oh, so I slept for an hour and 15 minutes.
Oh.
And I nailed it. Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
I know.
So that's when I thought you'd get in trouble.
Yeah, so I got myself, so I decided, you know, I can push it a little. I'm going to wait till I'm really tired. It's Saturday morning. I can sleep however way I want. So I went to bed at 2 o'clock in the morning. Stayed up programming Swift on a Friday night. It was kind of fun.
Dude, that is fun.
Yeah. And then, so I went to bed about 2 o'clock. I fell asleep pretty much right away. And then I woke up at 2:30. And I went to sleep at 3 p.m. on Saturday. It was the next time I was able to sleep.
Wow.
It was brutal. It was, oh my goodness. And I was just like, I'd go through these cycles where I'd try to watch like relaxing videos. That wouldn't work. So I'd try to read. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to read programming textbooks so that I can like, you know, most boring things I can read, which of course just got me stoked to want to program. So I was like, well, I might as well get out of bed and program. So I'd program for an hour or two, get tired enough where I'd like lay in bed. Wouldn't fall asleep, so I'd watch relaxing videos. That wouldn't work, so I'd go back to read. Oh, it was a cycle. And then finally, 9 o'clock came around, and my buddy was like, hey, want to go work out? I was like, I might actually kill myself if I wouldn't work out right now. I just dropped the weights on myself, so let's go for a walk. But then I was up and running, and it was rough.
Wow.
It was brutal. But last night, I went to bed about 1 o'clock and woke up at 8, so, you know, not too bad. I'm hoping, fingers crossed, I can do the same thing again tonight. But you know what, James? We're not here to talk about my sleeping habits.
No, we're not.
We are here this week, like every week, to talk about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and of course, last but not least, the technology they're developing. Before we get into the heart of the show, though, James has got a shirt disclosure to throw our way.
I work for Hewlett-Packard. However, I do not represent Hewlett-Packard. Or any of Hewlett-Packard's opinions.
That's not that important this week. But it's good to throw it out there anyways. So you never know when...
I'm legally required to, otherwise I could probably get in trouble. So we will mention it every week.
Exactly. Not to mention, you never know when HP Topics will rear their ugly heads and we'll have to...
It does happen from time to time. They are a tech company.
It's true. They're related. If you want to follow us at the week, we're all up in the social media. I'm on Twitter at Matthew D. Furlow is my handle. I'm on Instagram. NextWiggin4 is my thing there. 2 G's. Number 4. I'm on Slingshot. Same one. NextWiggin4. Check it out.
Nice. Let's see here. I am also on Twitter and actually active this last week, but it was all soccer related. So if you're not watching soccer, you'll probably have no idea what I'm tweeting about. Like earlier, I tweeted a yes, and that was because U.S. had scored their second goal. So you kind of had to be on top of that. But anyways, yeah. James Furlow, at symbol before that username. JamesFurlow.com on the World Wide Web.
www.
I am not on Yo, so you can't find me there.
Okay,
but I am on Snapchat and Slingshot.
Oh, nice, nice. Oh man, I feel like we've said everything we need to say about Yo at this point. okay, maybe there's a little more to talk about. But if you want to go to the website, look at all the clicks and links that we talked about this week, videos and all sorts of fun stuff, go to furloughbros.com, link to the YouTube channel, link to the podcast, link to the links. It's all there. Check it out. Pretty cool. And yeah. So.
Let's talk sound for a little bit.
All right, so I didn't even want to bring it up because it falls solidly into the rumor category, and it's rumor, but I found that I kept talking about it with people, and when I do that, I feel like if I'm going to talk about it with people in my real life, I might as well talk about it on the show. So I'm talking about it on the show. The rumor is, as it stands right now, that for the iPhone 6, they want to make it slimmer, lighter than ever before. Sort of an Apple-esque thing to do. But if you take your iPhone 5 or 5S as it were. And actually, this is probably true on most of the phones. What you'll do is if you take a look at it, and I'll hold mine up to the camera for those who can see.
Okay.
And you use your calipers, what you'll see is the 3.5 millimeter jack on your headphone is
it's about 3.5 millimeter meters?
3.5 millimeter?
Yeah. It's about how wide it is.
Yeah, that's the around there. It's the standard headphone jack. It's actually 3.55. But it is about twice as wide as the Thunderbolt Lightning cable jack for the for the actual plug for the iPhone. So the theory goes, or the rumor is, that Apple, in a quest for ever thinner and lighter devices, is going to forego the 3.5 millimeter jack in order to just get rid of it, because it's stupid. Why would you need something like that?
Sweet, it's only switch been... to Bluetooth. I love it.
Exactly. It's only been an industry standard for the last two centuries. It's literally a technology from the 1800s. it was because it was invented for the switchboard operators.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah.
So, but what they're going to do is they're going to go over to one of two technologies from here on out to connect to your headphone listening devices. They're not getting rid of the headphones. As they just bought Beats, that would seem like a foolish move.
Probably a good move.
Yeah. Rather, what they're going to do is they're going to move over to Bluetooth on one hand, Bluetooth connected devices, which is very Apple-esque, and then the other would be Lightning cable tipped devices. So you'll have your little Lightning. So instead of at the end, you'll have having your 3.5 millimeter headphone jack. They'll have the they'll have just a little cable, and your headphones will be full digital if they plug into an iPhone.
So they'll sound awesomer.
That's the argument. It gets rid of a lot of sound problems, which the reality of it is, you know, most devices that connect to the iPhone that way already have that built in, right? I mean, you know, your CarPlay, for example, it does audio that way. So why not just move everything over to that direction? How do we feel about this?
You know, I wish they could just make the headphone jack the same as the Lightning connector. Just make them one. And, you know, you could just connect your headphones into that if you were on the go. And then if you ever had to charge it, you know, somehow you got a splitter or something, you know, something like that where they build upon each other and, you know, just kind of channels through it. To me, that seems like the most efficient way to go about this, but maybe I'm...
What do you mean? I don't understand.
Well, just get rid of the headphone, the 3.55 millimeter headphone jack altogether, and just take it all through the Lightning connector.
That's what they're saying.
Oh, I thought they were. I'm sorry, I missed that. So just one hole at the bottom, then.
One hole at the bottom.
Love it. It's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, but then you'd have to buy iPhone specific headphones, and all of your cool headphones go away.
Whatever, I don't have any cool headphones.
You see, this... Okay, so for those of you who can't read this because you're listening and not sharing this document with us, we label the articles however we want, and then we just link them to it. So the title I gave this article was, "When Apple Gets Rid of the 3.5 millimeter Headphone Jack, Will Matthew and James Still Defend This as a Brilliant Idea?" And then as a side note, I said, almost certainly.
Oh, yeah, so you did.
Yeah. Oh, jeez. I'm conflicted. I'm conflicted about this because the more I think about it, the more I think it's definitely going to happen. And I don't think it's – I think actually to them, in their mind, the compromise would be making headphone jacks that, you know, that have the Lightning connectors. And actually what I think is the most likely is they're not going to make Beats headphones with – or they might make some with – the Lightning connector headphones. I think what they're going to do is they're going to build a tiny little adapter that's the size of the one that you have here, that with a 3.5 millimeter plug in it. And what you'll do is you'll plug that in, and then you'll plug
that.
Your headphone in. I think that's the – and they'll charge $30 for it, and they'll make tons of
that's
money.
What they do.
And what they'll argue is that, you know, the iPhone is a wireless device. Everything should be wireless. Go and buy wireless Beats headphones.
That's a good idea.
And that's going to be their argument. And they're just, you're just going to see it go away. And because I just couldn't, I cannot imagine myself buying headphones that are that standard specific. Like, that just seems really, they're, I use them for too much. I use them too often for too many different things. And I just sit there and I go, like, because the problem that I would see is that if they made Beats headphones with the lightning jack, you literally could never use them with any other device because they're not going to license that that hole for audio. I can't imagine that they would. That's so not Apple. Whereas, you know,
yeah, but Beats, don't the plugs come off of the headphones?
A lot of times, yeah.
You just ship them with two.
I guess you could do that. Well, except one's an analog thing and one's a digital thing. I mean, they're
whatever. You can figure it out. Just engineer it. I already got the idea. We're good.
Okay. All right. Well, okay. That's so. Do you think this is the way it's going, and it's inevitable, and you're happy about it?
I don't think it's going to happen this iteration. I would be okay with it.
Okay. Fair enough. All right. That's enough.
You
that's
know,
enough
I think like most
mongering.
Things, they're you know, yeah, they're exploring the option. I'd be shocked if it happened this time around, but I could see it in two or three rounds.
I could see it this round.
You know, they're going to wait until they can launch it with a line of Beats headphones. And maybe they've already been working on it, but yeah. I'd be shocked.
Okay. Fair enough.
That's what I go for. Speaking of being shocked, I love these headlines. It says, you'll be shocked at how much time young people spend reading each day.
I will be.
Did you see that our sister sent an email? That was that last week or 2 weeks ago? It was like, this husband is about to go on the most important of a date of his life, and it's not with his wife. Did you see that?
Yes. I saw, yeah.
And it was a video. But it was funny, man. I, especially in the context of having talked about Clickhole the previous week. And I saw it and just went, I instantly knew that it was on a date with his daughter. I was like, yeah, that's got to be what it is.
Right.
And just classic, let's skew this headline to make you want to click. So
yeah,
that's why I saw this. You'll be shocked at how much time young people spend reading each day. Like, will I be?
Yeah. I almost certainly won't be, no matter which way it goes, even if it's not my expectation.
So here's a question. Have you cheated and looked at the article yet?
I have not.
Okay, all right. So this will be fun. We'll get to guess. We'll see if you'll be shocked or not, okay?
Okay.
So it's daily minutes spent reading.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay.
On weekends and holidays. Apparently, which doesn't sound daily to me, but whatever.
Yeah, that sounds rather anti-daily.
Is that... Yeah. That's when they're... So it's during leisure times is the idea behind it. Yeah. All right, so let's see here. Your age group, you would be in the 25 to 34-year-old age group?
Technically.
We're in the same age group this time around. I've kind of...
Wow.
Right at that tipping point where you and I, only being 3 years apart, you know, because I'm 30, oftentimes I get bumped up.
Yeah, we're finally moving into that where the age ranges get wider, you know, mid-year.
Yeah, yeah, really. So how many minutes per day on a weekend or a holiday do you think people our age read? You'll be shocked. Yeah, honest opinion. What do you think?
Do they include news articles and text messages and books? Like, what are we including, like, words read, minutes spent reading words of any sort, or is it a particular type of reading? Because I'd say books and stuff. I'd say probably 30 minutes. I'd say it's not tons. I would say if you include news articles, it'd crop up into the hour or two. Actually, and then I'd say if you include everything, I'll bet it's a surprisingly large amount of time, on average.
I'm gonna go with books. News does not count. Because of other comments they made. Because they say in addition to e-books, platforms may include. Yeah, I'm gonna go with books, and then I'll continue on my story. Anyways, what'd you say?
I'd say on average, I'd say less than an hour. Some people will spend all day. Most people won't.
Mm-hmm. I think that's actually the interesting question that they should ask, and they didn't. But that's because I'm a statistician and I know these things. What we're getting are average numbers, and a more interesting question would be, what percentage of people actually read on any given day, on the weekend or holiday? And then, of those who do, how much do they read? You know?
Yeah.
Because I feel like 95% of the people's answers here is zero.
Right. And that weights in a certain direction.
Yeah, yeah. So, now that I'm saying this and thinking about it out loud, this is dumb, but whatever. The answer comes out to 7.8 minutes.
Yeah. My first guess was 30 minutes, so, you know.
Not even horrible. Close. Are you shocked?
I would say I'm just about as unshocked as you could be by that
number. So, the only group of people who read less than our group are the 15 to 19-year-olds at 4.2, which, again, I'm like...
Do homework.
Yeah, which apparently doesn't count. So, but the 20 to 24s, they're up to 10.2 minutes. Now, when you get to retirement age, 65 to 74, you're up to 43.8. And then when you're above 75, you're over an hour at 61.8 minutes.
Oh, baby.
Which, that might be the most shocking of them all.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah, so, and they were saying that the problem that kids have is that we like to multitask. So they were saying the electronic platforms on which children read also hold vast diversions that are only, they say, a click away. I think it should be a tap away. So they say in addition to ebooks, they have games, apps, websites, YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat, and a multitude of innovative ways of watching TV and movies. Which, by the way, if... they do have it. What is this? This is frequency of reading for fun. Okay, so let's see here. 17-year-olds, that's the closest we have for you and me.
So these are all grade schoolers.
Yeah, I guess that's true. It's the important stat, I think, is almost every day back in 1984, and they probably picked that date for a very specific reason, 31% of people read almost every day. It's down to 19%. And then for the never/hardly ever, in 1984, it used to be 9%, and now it's up to 27%.
Wow. Interesting. So the hardcore readers went down, but the never readers... Oh, they went up too. Never mind.
Yeah, yeah. So it's interesting. You know, they sit there and say, you know, obviously they're like, you know, technology is a big thing. That people still average 3 hours of TV a day.
That's shocking to me. Except, do they include YouTube and TV, or is that like network TV? Do they include?
I think it's just network TV because
that's shocking to me.
Well, there you go. The article was right. You were shocked.
Yeah, but they were wrong about what I would be shocked by.
Oh, that's true. But yeah, just some interesting stats out there. And I sometimes wonder, like, what are the bigger cultural implications behind this? And it's hard not to go to a dark place when you think about it. which, you know, I struggle with.
It goes back to the idea that the most important movie of our age, of our current time, was the future documentary, also known as Idiocracy.
I had a conversation with our dad. Man, I think that was also this week. Time is melding for me right now. Or we were just talking about some of the some of the issues with education in our society and what are some of the implications behind it. And, you know, I think reading is a great barometer for, you know, education and success. And of course, I don't know, I think about me too, where it's like, I don't read a lot, but man, I listen to a lot of audiobooks.
You know, I would make this argument. I think it's important to read. But I enjoy reading, and I enjoy having a book in front of me and doing that. That being said, I still have to force myself to do it. It's the easiest form of entertainment for me to force myself to do. Like, I find it easier to force myself to read than it is to watch TV, than it is to play video games. Because my particular brand of wasting time nowadays is hanging out with friends and going and working out. You know, and it's just, it's you know, it's waste time, but it's, you know, or listening.
Which, by the way, socializing was the number two most done activity, which is averaged at 60 minutes a day.
Yeah, see, that's and for me, I have to cut in my TV time around that, and TV time basically got wiped off the face of my life. And, you know, because I waste my time otherwise nowadays. And I guess my broader point that I'm trying to get to is, I think that, yeah, we're going in an interesting new direction, but I'm not nearly as terrified as I think you could be. I think what it means to get interesting and important ideas and exercise your brain, I think there are way new ways to do that. I think we write and read more today than we did 10 years ago in general. People that are like, you know, because you think about it, it's like people who spend a lot of time on sites like Reddit or Pinterest or stuff like that and commenting and reading and, you know, DIY articles and stuff. And yeah, there's a lot of video and stuff interlaced in there, but there's a tremendous amount of information processing and reading that people are doing on those sites and writing. You know, and it's, you know, it's the grammar Nazis of Reddit that make sure that, yo, you spelt this wrong, or, you know, and stuff like that. You know, it's that kind of thing. I don't know. I think it's a wild west right now of being able to read and write. And I don't think that it's necessarily fair to judge our culture and our society based on, you know, how many of the Harry Potters you've gone through. You know, I think it's a good goal to set. But and then the other side of that is, I know how so many people that are reading, like, you know, Fault in Our Stars, like. I can't tell you how many of my friends have read that, which I just...
What is it?
Like, The Fault in Our Stars.
I've never heard of that.
Well, are you serious? This is like, it was like a great, it was the number one movie in America, like 2 weeks in a row, last 2 weeks. It's like these two kids get
cancer. The Fault in Our Stars?
The Fault in Our Stars. It's a, it's,
the
it's,
Fault,
you know,
in Our Stars.
So The Fault, My Dear something or other, I can't remember the dude's name. My Fault, My Dear Blah is... It is in Our Stars. It's a reference to a quote from Shakespeare, because he's all about the star-crossed lovers. I mean, anytime you get stars predicting the future in Shakespeare, it's always a bad omen. So as soon as I heard the title, I was like, oh, okay, so everybody dies in this book. And I said it kind of off the cuff, only to find out that, yeah, it's about two teenagers that get cancer, fall in love, and then die. So it's a bit of a tearjerker.
Way to spoil it.
Yeah, well, you know, hey, it's in the title. It's not my fault if y'all can't, like, you know, if y'all didn't read Shakespeare. See what I just did there? See what I did? I just got on people, trying to defend people not reading, and then made fun of people for not reading. But I think that, you know, with what's going on, you know, what am I trying to say? Think. I am shocked by how many people have read that book. Just tons of my friends that you wouldn't even think cared about a genre such as teen romance and, you know, teenagers with cancer dying type books, and they're reading it because, you know, more and more movies are being made off of books, and people are reading the books and going with the movies, especially in our age group. I don't think it's, you know, maybe it's just the crowd that I run with and the area that I live, but there's still a tremendous amount of just fun reading of books that goes on along with the TV, you know, TV watching and everything. I think to me, the most startling thing that I can say is I don't know of a lot of friends that spend a lot of time producing stuff, making music, writing books, working on making video games, painting, stuff like that. Most of my friends spend a tremendous amount of time consuming, and I'm really not sure how much better it is to consume a book than it is a TV show if it's just a, you know, fluff fiction. It's just passive entertainment.
Well, I think this might be a good segue. I'm going to take it. Maybe if we had a way to force people to produce before they could consume, you would have a winning product. And so I'm just transitioning right out of it.
I was going to say, you know what? It was a good thought to end on, so I'm just going to let it happen, and we'll go a completely different direction. That's fine.
All right, I did hear you, and. Yeah, we could spend all the podcast.
This is a bit of a neck breaker, and we got a lot of cool things to talk about, so let's go for it.
So so Facebook is trying to solve the problem where apparently, you know, they say it's usually 1% of the people could produce, and the other 99 will just consume and consume and consume. And so Facebook is kind of addressing that with a new product that they're launching called Slingshot. And I'm honestly struggling with how to describe it. I guess I'll start with some of the features, and then we'll just talk about some of the thoughts behind it, I guess. So it is essentially, so here's what you do. You take a picture or a video, and you send it to people on your friends list, okay? It's pretty easy, and you can annotate it if you want to. Just like Snapchat in that regards. And the animations are awesome. The sound effects are pretty fun and pretty cool. When you send the picture, it comes down and then shoots up. And I was reading this one thing, it was like, yeah, it shoots up like a rocket. It's like, what? No. Like a slingshot. You're really? And I was just like, whoosh, went right over that guy's head. That's cool.
Yeah.
So the animations are fun and interesting, and they like them. So
if you notice, it's all the paper API animation calls.
Yeah. No. They're very cool, and I think they got some interesting design pieces that they're doing, and are really pushing the envelope on that in a good way.
Yeah.
I think the app will ultimately fail because, let me just spoil it out there, because here's what happens. Let's say I send it to you, and you would like to see this photo that I just slung your way, and before you can see it, you need to send me a picture or a video to unlock it, and then once you've done that, they go, all right, cool, you're off the hook, you can now view it, and then once you look at it, it has another cool feature that I actually genuinely like, is you can double tap on the video or image and then react to it, either with a picture, a video, or you can type a comment that then has like a faded picture of you that it just took in the background to give a little context. So I really, 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 so there's a bunch of features that I love. I love the fact that you can react. I love, you know, how easy it is to take a picture and do this stuff. It's got a really good color chooser on it. Like I said, the animations are cool. The sounds are cool. I think it's a really, really, really well-designed app. There's just one really big fundamental flaw in it, which is before you can see what I send you, you have to produce some content to give to me. And then before I can see what you send me, I have to create a picture. And on one hand, it's like, yeah, see, it's viral. You got to keep going. You always got to have a reason to go back. I'm like, yeah, but what do you do in the situations where you don't have anything? Like, I'm sure you've noticed there's been a couple where I'm like, here's a picture of the ground. Because
right.
I don't really care. I just want to see what you sent me. So I just...
I sent you one that was it was a picture of me, and it just said obligatory.
Yes, I saw that, and I was like, oh great, I sent you like some ceiling tiles, as you know, in order to see that. And I'm like, great, which I think that's the inherent problem, right? You know, I'm gonna do that a couple times, and you're gonna be like, well, whatever, I don't. He was just seeing what I sent him, so I'm not gonna open it now. Done.
So okay, so I will put this caveat. It's not a 1-to-1 ratio. You don't have to send one picture in order to view one picture. So if you send me interesting pictures and I finally come up with something interesting to send back, I get to see all three at the same time, which is important.
So, yeah, and they did an interview with the designer of it, and the way that he thinks about it and talks about it, which I guess makes sense. I don't ultimately think it'll work, but it makes sense. Is he goes, no, think of this more as a timeline. It's not a communication tool. It's in order to access the timeline, you got to contribute to the timeline. And so I'm not sending you a message. If I want to send you a message, I'll use yo or send you a text message. Because we'll get there. We'll get there. But we'll make fun of it the entire show.
Once again, I think we've said all that needs to be said, but we will get back to it.
So anyways, they're like, it's not to communicate something. It's, oh, I saw this moment, so I want to share it. And then when you have a moment that you want to share, that's when you do that. And then at that time, you can unlock it. So he's like, so don't send time-critical stuff because it's not designed to be opened one-for-one like that, similar to Snapchat or WhatsApp or text messaging. You should really think of it more as a very personalized Facebook
timeline.
Thank you. And the other cool feature that I do like is that when, you know, if you do have a bunch stacked up, when you finally do unlock them, it loads them all, and you can just flick through one at a time, and you can reply and do your stuff and then move on to the next. And again, it's very well done from a design standpoint. I really, really like it. I would love to actually see some of that ported over to paper and then ultimately ported over to the actual Facebook app, because I really like some of their design.
So, yes, I agree. I agree with you on most of these points. I will say this. There are two thoughts that I have about it. Number one, do you know why they're putting the quote-unquote the mandatory response? Do you know what the genesis of that is?
No.
They couldn't make Poke again because it now infringes on Snapchat patents. So they can't make a better Snapchat clone because Snapchat actually has a patent on that design feature. So they had to do something, anything, in order to make it close to Snapchat, but in order to make it legally different enough that they wouldn't get sued for it.
I didn't know Snapchat had patents on...
Yeah, I read an article about that just this afternoon, and unfortunately I didn't think to link it because I'm an idiot. But yeah, that was the one. That was a big piece of that functionality. But this is the other thing, and it's funny. I was talking with I went abroad and I got criticized by a number of friends for my lack of Snapchats while I was abroad. And I'm like, I was posting to Instagram the whole time, was commenting on Facebook stuff. Like, what do you people want from me? And they're like, Snapchats. We want Snapchats from you. Which to me, I'm like, I read Snapchats. I really go out of my way to like read Snapchats quickly. I don't just let them hang there. And since I know it sends you a notification, I figure that's good enough. You know, I saw it. But I have friends...
That's interesting. I did an experiment on you this weekend, and I don't know if you noticed it, but I was at that lake on Saturday, and I sent you a slingshot. I sent you a Snapchat. I also posted it on Instagram, which then syndicated it to Facebook and Twitter and Foursquare. And I was curious to see where you responded first, and sure enough, you liked it on Instagram. And that was what you did first. And I went, yep, that's what I would have expected. That's the winner. That's where I would have posted it. And totally skipped over Snapchat and Slingshot.
Well, it's funny. And and somebody asked me, like, why don't you use Snapchat? And I was like, because you can't like it on Snapchat.
You know, it's funny. Actually, they finally added that feature of the text messaging in there where you could type a response. Because, like, our sister would send us stuff, and I would want to be like, oh, that's cool. And I literally used to, like, take a picture of myself and go, oh, that's cool. And I was like, oh, whatever. But now I could, once the picture was done and I could swipe over it and I could just type, hey, that's cool. It's like, oh, that's awesome. Now I'm actually commenting. A like would work just as well.
I can't wait to I can't wait to see iMessages just come in and just like go around like a wrecking ball to all of these apps with their.
Oh, that's right. I keep forgetting about that, huh?
Yeah, they're just Snapchat gonna baked into iMessages now, which is just hilarious. And because it's Apple, and I know the iMessages protocols, and I know that they're good engineers, I actually believe those to be. Those are actually temporary pictures that will be actually deleted from the phone and actually won't hit, you know, Apple servers and be stored forever. Whereas Snapchat, you can't believe that. You're an idiot if you do. But the other thought that I had is that I have friends that their thing like with Snapchat was they give people like 4 Snapchat tries. They'll send you like a couple of Snapchats. And if you don't respond in like kind, they're done. You're like,
wow.
They won't send anything to you because they're all about.
Really?
They want the, you know, the feedback. They want the conversation. They want that. And
then they would like Slingshot, except it's not a conversation because you have to reply before you know what to reply to.
Right. Well. Yeah. Yeah. That's part of the difficulty. But I think I have a feeling that there's a certain crowd that's going to really like it because what they like is receiving snaps or slings or whatever you want to, you know, Jesus, it's going to be confusing. They like, even the name Slingshot is barely copyright proof. if they like receiving snaps. And so that's why they send snaps. It's all about, you know, it's about getting, you know, cool, up-to-date pictures. I think there's a certain sect of, you know, there's a certain population that would be very interested in this. And the question really becomes, you know, a lot of Snapchat's stickability. You know, the reason why people went with Snapchat to begin with was because it was a unique. It was actually, and I come back around to this, I think they've poorly executed on a million different things. The one thing that they've actually done really, really, really well is was that initial idea of the temporary picture. Like, that was stupid but brilliant at the same time. And I think it then got the network effect going, right? You got on it because your friends got on it, and your parents got on it because their kids got on it, and then everybody's using it. So now the question becomes, it's a network effect thing, and can Slingshot get the network effect going? You know, you and I unfortunately have a difficult time actually, you know, maintaining, getting anything going sometimes.
Well, yeah, and I honestly didn't invite anybody to it other than you, because I knew that you would download it for the fun of it and, you know, to try it, and we're actually slingshotting right now, which is kind of fun.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what I sent you, except
you probably do,
because you can see my video.
Now.
But yeah, I'm just like, I'm not going to invite anybody to this. I can already tell just from doing it that it's not going to. It's not going to stick.
That's funny. We slung the exact same thing.
Yes, I noticed that. I like a lot of their design stuff. I hope that this one, shall I call it a killer feature, in the bad sense, doesn't distract from the really good stuff they've done with it.
Well, they couldn't do it otherwise. And I wonder how Apple's dealing with it. If their whole argument is going to be either A, we didn't know you had a patent, so they're just going to do it, or if B, if it's going to be if they have some sort of an argument of, well, it's part of a holistic messaging app. That, you know, and it's just one feature, and it's not, you know, it's
well, yeah, and it probably uses a different technology and protocol and a bunch of stuff I can see, because a patent is, it can't be a design thing, it's got to be the way in which it does it, and Apple will get away around that because it's a totally different process than what they use.
And they can also just say, hey, Snapchat, guess what? You're not allowed in the iPhone or the. Look at these new rules we have for the App Store. You're not allowed in anymore.
That would be bad.
Because it would be horrible. It would be bad if they did.
So I think you've already hinted at it, but what do you think? Think it'll be around for the long haul?
No. I think there are design things that you're going to see. It's a nice little computer science experiment. It's a nice little graphics art experiment. And I think that there are pieces of it that will continue. I don't think it'll reach the network effect, because this is the biggest thing is, you know, come September, like I said, there's going to be a wrecking ball that just gets thrown into this whole mess. And I really do think that Apple finally figured out what you and I have been saying kind of since the beginning of all of this, which is it's a good idea in concept, the whole video messaging thing, and Apple just needs to get on the bandwagon of making it easy. And I think they finally have, and you're going to see it just become get all messed up. So I do have this, I think as a result, you'll see this go away. I read an article this weekend about it. The title of the article was Snapchat to buy Facebook Slingshot for $4 billion.
Nice.
And then the first line, declining Facebook's $3 billion is not only a bold move, or is not the only bold move Snapchat CEO Evan Spiegel is capable of. The video messaging firm unveiled today its plans to buy Slingshot, the new Snapchat-like app from Facebook, for nearly $4 billion.
Nice.
The young company still doesn't have any money. Could finance the operation using a leveraged buyout with the cash coming from new investors, such as other dudes. And Ashton Kutcher. This is obviously a little bit parody, but it also brings up a new website that's been built called TrapCrunch.com. It looks just like TechCrunch in a lot of different ways. And nice. They're all parody tech articles. That was like one of their debut articles. I was like, that's pretty funny. That's a pretty funny idea.
Nice. Now, Snapchat didn't, probably won't do that, but they did unveil a new feature-ish, which looks interesting. I don't know how I feel about it. It's like Color. Do you remember Color back in the day? They got like $41 million in funding, and they were going to revolutionize photos and whateverness. And then it ended up not doing that. It was a total laughingstock, and Apple ended up buying it for $7 million for their patent portfolio, and they totally shut down the app. But the idea behind it was, you're all at an event, you can all take photos together at this event, and then you could see them all and share them. And whoever was nearby would be able to see the photos as if they were there from your perspective. You know, Apple's answer to that was, I don't know, what are those where you can share the photos? PhotoStream. There we go. I feel like Google has an answer to it. I just can't think of it right now. But Snapchat has set it up where they're calling it Our Story instead of just like Your Story. Which, remember, Your Story was the one where you could take a photo, add it to your story, and then people could see it for 24 hours. So it was like this 24-hour rotating group of photos. And now with Our Story, they were saying, like, for example, there's the EDC coming up, which is the Electric Daisy Carnival.
Mm-hmm.
It's a 140,000-person dance music festival. Ba-da-da-da-da. And essentially people can follow that that event in a way. And so anyone who follows it, when you take a picture, you can upload it to it, and then anyone who also follows that event can see all the pictures that were uploaded to that event. Does
cool.
that make sense? So you could have, like, in one of the pictures, it looks like there's 156 different photos that were added, and so the idea is you could feel like you were at the event without being at the event, is the idea. There's some of this stuff, I'm looking at it, and it's like, why doesn't Facebook just integrate this into Instagram? Because I actually think that would be pretty sweet, where it's already got the instant messaging stuff. They could do the private stuff. They could add a lot of the animation and framework from like Slingshot and Paper over to Instagram to make it even more fun to use. And then they could add a something like this, right? Where it's these group photo albums where you click on it and then you can scroll through and you can like stuff and it's as if you're there. You know, the whole tagging system, essentially, right? I mean, that's what they just created. It's a tag that when you share it with it, it essentially adds that tag, right? Have I captured this concept pretty thoroughly?
Yeah. It's not. Yeah, I think it's one of those things where the reason why is because the nature of the Facebook structure of the company right now, and the whole fact that they don't want to go in and, you know, crush Snapchat and the little team that they've got going there, you know, and what they're doing. Because there's a lot of things that you look at Snapchat and you wonder, why don't you do it differently? You could change this, make this better. But for whatever reason, they think they've got a magic sauce and they don't want to. I think, honestly, if I had to guess, it would be they think they have a magic sauce that keeps people around and they don't want to mess with it and ruin it by accident.
That's fair.
There's a reason why they don't mess with Snapchat. I think part of their problem is they don't want to disrupt Snapchat either. And I think that's a mistake because I think a team could come through and build a Facebook version of a Snapchat clone. That's obviously they're all linked together and they all, you know, magically communicate with each other. So if you put it on Snapchat, it pushes into this thing with all of these cool, awesome features, and they could call it Facebook Photos. You know, I think my guess would be they don't feel like they know what the magic sauce is, but there is a magic sauce and they don't want to mess with it is the reason they don't. As a kind of a broader point, I think Snapchat here with their whole Our Story thing, as you've illuminated, this isn't the first time people have tried stuff like this. It's not the last time people will try stuff like this. The entire magic of it is who is participating. And what's unique about this idea is that it's basically an album that is built, that is curated through geotagging, which is kind of a cool idea. You know, and and for certain types of events, that's really cool because, you know, like this sort of a thing, especially with something like EDC, which, you know, if you're familiar with it at all, it's a big rave is what it is. It's like a 3-day rave. And it's the sort of thing that I think would be captured well in Snapchat, you know, for the audience that uses Snapchat. I tell you, like, that's one of the most common snaps I get on weekends is people like at some party and music going and everybody dancing. People like to share those things.
Do you get totally jealous when you see those? Are you like, oh man, I totally wish I was there?
No, because
just Snapchat, check it.
Because this is the problem, James. These are all filmed by amateurs with iPhones. It's just not good quality. There are videos of parties and concerts and stuff that make me just go, oh man, I just wish I was there. You know, I've got it playing on my big monitors with loud music. You're just like, oh, this is so cool. I want to be there and be in that crowd. And then I watch stuff that's, you know, filmed by most people. I'm like, this is a really bad video. That is a really bad video. My broader point on this is that I think it's a cool idea, but it is entirely going to be come down to the quality of the content.
Mm-hmm. And interesting. I think interesting it's distinction. Really, there.
And I think it's really easy for it to go sideways really quick for Snapchat. I feel like that's the reason this feature won't take off. Not because it's a bad idea, because it's not. People have done it before. People will do it again. I think it's all about can you figure out how to get the curation in such a way and where it's actually interesting to watch, because it could be very quickly become too big, you know, just unwieldy, these huge, like, you know.
Well, look at that, 156 photos, that's already too big.
Exactly.
I'm
going
to sit there and hold my screen for 156 photos that are all 7 to 13 seconds long.
Yeah, exactly. And I wouldn't do it. And if they average 10 seconds of, you know, a shot, you're talking 15, you're talking, what is that? That's like, well, 120 seconds would be 2 minutes times 10 would be 12 minutes. I'm not going to watch a 12-minute video of, you know, people Snapchatting. That's stupid. That's a bad video. What I would watch is a 2-minute video that somebody got a bunch of different, you know, Snapchats together, somebody from the event. They watched the 12 minutes of Snapchats. picked out the top, six or seven, and threw them into a video and made a minute or two long video.
See, that's what I was still saying. Instagram should come where you've got again, it's divided by geotag and maybe time-based event, or if you're all checking into an event, whatever, and or a hashtag, I don't care, and it's set up where you can search for that, or you can see that, or somehow they feature it, whatever. 'Cause they see you're in the area, right? And you can see Snapchat's nearby, or events that my friends are at. There's ways to surface it, and then set it up where you can either A, just straight up do the timeline and scroll through at whatever speed you want. I like that. Like, okay, I just keep going until, and maybe they figure out a way to highlight my specific friends' ones, or I can filter to just my friends that were at that event. I would like that. And also do give me the best of the best. Give me the highlights. Yeah. And you just filter them by likes. Right. And then you can see what the good ones are. And
yeah, see, I'm going to say even an algorithmic curation like you're describing. So it's like you're curating by geotag, and then you're curating by likes. So it's all, it's all crowdsourced. There's not somebody creating an album that they think is cool. That would be a preference over just the raw stream. And yeah, that's I think the fundamental flaw of it is that it's the raw stream. You're going to get a lot of garbage before with a few gems, and the few gems are going to disappear as soon as you see them, and it's not going to be worth it.
Yep. It's somehow not a bad idea, it's just not. Somehow they need to integrate it in with Secret so that you can also see, what are people thinking about the event that they don't want others to know about, and you should be able to react to those as well, and people can see those reactions in either a comment, which I realize is a comment or a like. But
why would you broadcast live like a $1 billion app idea, or at least a $1 million app idea?
Yeah, I don't know. I look at that and go, man, Instagram could be all over that, and they've already got the user base. They could add some of those features. I think people would be pumped about it.
Well, and I know that you can get at least a million ideas for that idea, because it's a good idea. It genuinely has something going on. Actually, that would be pretty cool to just create an app that like somehow meshes a an Instagram or Snapchat timeline together with Secret. But the reason why I know it's worth at least $1 million, James, is because I know what's worth $1 million.
Oh, yes. Yo. So,
this is ridiculous.
So, launched on April 1st, was originally denied by the App Store because they thought it was incomplete. Is the app... They're like, oh, your app isn't done yet. Actually, it is kind of yo. Is an app called Yo. And there's an awesome video. We'll link to it. It's Colbert. He goes, it's an app that allows you to express yourself with two letters. He goes, I would like to express myself with just one letter. Why? Yeah, pretty funny. And he goes on to make fun of it. Which, here's the funny part. Okay, so the idea behind the app is you have a list of friends' names and who also have the app installed. You tap on their name, and it sends them essentially a push notification that says, wait for it, yo.
Yo.
That's it. They see the push notification, done. They don't even have to open the app because they already know what it says. It says yo. And if they do open it up and they tap on your name, they just sent you it and yo. Okay? That's the app. So, this is pretty funny. So I was telling, Jesse was like, so you got any good things you're going to talk about on the podcast? And I was like, oh, yeah, Amazon's been up to something, and there's Slingshot, and then there's yo. She's like, oh, what's yo? And I was like, well, and I went through that description, and she was like, that's the dumbest thing ever. And I, it's funny. And I started it off with my caveat was like, I must be getting older because I'm starting to not understand these apps. Like, I don't like Slingshot. There's one feature that really doesn't make any sense to me, as we've talked about. And then Yo, I'm like, I don't even kind of get it. I feel like, again, Apple's already kind of integrated this feature with iMessage. but it was funny. She's like, I just sent someone a text message. Went, no. See, the problem is that there's like 9 taps in order to do that, whereas with this is just 2. And so it's faster. And she's like, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Are people really that lazy? And so we had that conversation. And I was like, well, you know, and I'm trying to defend it, you know? And I was like, well, and the other thing is, like, try to go on a deeper level here where it's all about being context aware, you know? And that's the, you know, that's the important part, because a Yo means different things when it's coming from different people at different times. And so it's all about your context. And she's like, what? I was like, no, you see, like, if I'm like, yo, versus yo, like, they mean two things. If it comes from, if it's coming from your sister versus coming from me, you interpret that differently. It's based on the context. And she's like, nope, that's dumb. And so it was great. So I pulled up this Colbert video after we had talked about it. And I hadn't seen it yet, so we were both watching it. And he starts it off with, like, again, he goes, I can express myself in one letter, why. And he goes, well, the reason why, and he totally goes into the two reasons that I stated. He goes, because according to the app maker, it's like 11 taps in order to send it, and it's only, you know, 2 to do his. He's like, that's a 9-tap difference, folks. He goes, you could be spending those 9 taps with your kids. This is important. And, you know, just totally making fun of it. And then he goes, but you got to understand, it's not just saying yo. There's context to this as well. And he goes, according to the founder, you know, and he just lists that exact same thing. And I was like, oh, this is sweet. He's making fun of the exact stuff that Jesse and I were talking about. And I mean, like, and this founder, at first they were like, it was an April Fool's joke is what people thought. But he's like, he's serious about it. He's like, no, this is deep. This will change your life. And he's got an API where other brands can, like, send you a yo. Say, like, when the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast starts up, we could send people yos so that they know how to do it. Which I'm like, it's called a notification, isn't it? That you can't act upon? I don't know. Help me out here. But yeah, so that's my take on yo. Yo.
Okay. This thing is hard to defend. This thing is hard to defend, and it wouldn't be worth even bringing it up if it weren't for the fact, as I've mentioned already, they've raised $1 million.
Yeah.
Now, and the reason for it is it's somebody who literally sat there and said, something's happening here. People are paying attention. Now, this is probably really a stupid app, but there's a small chance that it's not. And they basically threw in $1 million. You know, it's one of those, you know, as an investor, you have to invest in 10 failures in order to hit the one, you know, jackpot.
Yeah,
and they said, well, we might as well throw $1 million at this thing because we throw $50 million all the time. So, you know, this is pennies in, you know, in the Silicon Valley, you know, investor world. So, got raised $1 million to build an app that says yo, and it's got APIs like you said and all that jazz. And the one that's funny, it's one of the things that one of the examples that I heard was that it's like, okay, your plane lands and you've set it up so that when you land at the airport, the Southwest will send your ride a little message that just says yo. And they'll know if they're getting if you know Southwest is sending them a yo, your plane's arrived. And once again,
why make them guess? Why not just have it so, like, when, for example, when our mom came to Portland, I just had an alert that you can set up in the app that says alert me when it comes, and they'll just send you a text message. Done. You don't even have to download an app. You can go to the website and input your phone number.
Argument.
Done.
It's all about the network effect. It's one of those things where if you can get enough people on it for the fun of it, that there is a certain group of people that will use it, and like you said, because it's all about the context and everything. If you know you're, you know, if I know that I got to pick you up from the airport and I know you're gonna land, I know if it's from S-Dub that it's you that's yoing me, and I think it's one of those things where this is stupid, but if you get enough people using it or enough people logged in and all, basically what you're doing and the way you describe it is a very simplified kind of central place for people to send push notifications. Like you said, I mean, well, that could be your...
I know what you're saying. I'm just like, this is Facebook Poke. It's a poke, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's a poke that anybody can participate in. And I think the reason
you gotta have the app downloaded.
But I mean, once you have it downloaded, you can set it up so anybody can poke you, and it's like, I guess, it's stupid. It's stupid.
I love it.
You know
why don't? At least they didn't just give $1 million, right? That's supposed to be like used for development purposes and whatever. So I'm okay with that. And it is only $1 million, which is relatively small in the app ecosystem of startups. But yeah, I know. I mean, I would take it, but it's not for him to like go on vacation. It's for him to work on it. He's like working on it full time now. Moved from Israel to San Francisco to do this for real. Just like, all right, man. I look at it as, you know, some people were like, A, it either signifies we're totally in a bubble, or B, he's going to work on it a little more, get bought by someone, and make a cool, you know, he'll get bought for $10, $20 million, and they'll all walk away with a 10x gain in their investment, and they're like,
which is the plan.
It's a good day. Yeah, totally
is.
It's
kind of a bubble. That's terrifying. Don't tell me
that. How do we create the next Yo? Because it said that he made this in like 8 hours or something. Terribly difficult. You're learning Swift. You're learning Swift. You're not sleeping. You're learning Swift. What's our next idea, man? What can we do in like 8 hours? How good are you right now?
I don't know. Not that good. I don't know.
Just gotta go viral.
Yeah, that's basically what this is. It's a viral app that, you know. This thing is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
I mean, like, I understand, you know, we kind of were shaking our heads when Instagram got the $1 billion and, you know, and you're like, really? Which is a lot more money than $1 million. I get it. So I still kind of roll my eyes at it. But it's kind of like, I get it. It's a product and stuff. Man, the bar for making something and getting compensated for it is pretty darn low.
I know. It does make you wonder how we haven't done it yet. I'll tell you how we haven't done it yet. We haven't finished an app yet.
Yeah, well, maybe that's it, right? And, you know, and that's... You know, I've been... So I listened to this podcast. It's a real estate podcast, because those are cool.
That's what you do. That's how you roll.
Yeah, biggerpockets.com, highly recommend it. Though I'll warn you, if you go there, set aside a few hours of your time, because it's genuinely really good stuff. And you'll be inspired to want to buy property after you're done, just so you know. But anyways.
That's healthy for me.
At the end of each podcast, for each podcast, they interview someone who's successful in real estate, and they get their story about they did it. So at the end of them, they have what they call their famous four questions, where they're the same four questions that they ask everybody who they interview for these hour-long interviews. And one of them, and like the last question that they ask is, what do you think sets apart successful real estate investors from everyone else, essentially?
Yeah.
And I would say more often than not, the answer comes back to, you got to take action. Don't just sit on the sidelines. Don't do what we do, which is talk about and analyze and stew upon what others are doing and just learning about it. They're like, go out and do it. And, you know, to whatever degree that is, they're like, just pick something and do it. Finish it and learn along the run. Minimal viable product, that kind of stuff. Lean startup, blah, blah, blah.
It's the Garth Brooks lesson of, you know.
Okay.
Living in the fire, you know. It's, you know, Oh, geez, I can't remember the lyrics all of a sudden at living inside.
Wait, hold up. I lost your audio.
You know what I'm talking about.
Say that one more time.
You want? It's Living Inside the Fire, Garth Brooks.
Okay.
Standing outside the fire. There we go. You know, life is not tried. It is merely survived when you're standing outside the fire. And, you know, he talks about, we call them fools who have to dance within the flame, who chance the sorrow and the shame that always comes with getting burned. But you've got to be tough when consumed by desire, because it's not enough to stand outside the fire. Yeah, it's, I mean, you know.
Yeah, so I guess all that to say, okay, total joke app, you know,
also,
whatever.
All that to say, yo.
Yo, this guy took the time, he made something. Sure, it's dumb and stupid, but, you know, he made something. And kudos for him. He's already a step ahead of us. I'll give him that. I do want to learn how to program in Swift, because I already got the fundamentals. I hear it's pretty darn easy. And then you get examples like this, and you're like, come on.
Yeah. I know what you mean. That's why, like you said, I'm not sleeping anymore, James.
It's good.
Okay, you know what though, James? Let's stop talking about things that are done in 8 hours, and let's take a little bit about time to talk about something that takes 3 years to develop. We've been putting it off long enough, and you know what the most stressful part about my trip back to the States was? I got on the plane when it was like 6 o'clock in the morning in America. I got off the plane when it was like 9 o'clock in America, and I knew as I got on the plane that all of the stories and all of the everything was happening and I was missing out on it, and I was going to come back and I was going to be completely wigged out, and it would take me a couple of days to figure out what happened with Amazon's phone. And I was just like, didn't have internet access as I was flying over the Pacific, but I took the time, I got caught up, and it's kind of cool. So Amazon this week announced a new phone. We told you that it was coming, and so if you weren't paying attention, that's not our fault. We warned you. It has a couple of new features that are their big selling points.
Yep.
It's your kind of your standard from a high end phone. It's got a 4.7 inch IPS screen, 13 megapixel rear facing camera with image stabilization, f2.0 lens, pretty nice. Quad core 2.2 chip, graphics, 2 gigs of RAM, not enough to stand tall. You know, so it's not a super powerhouse of the Android families, but it's, you know, it's not a shame. It's not shameful either. Really, where it stands out is it's got a couple of features that are rare amongst Android devices. Number one, it's got four infrared cameras facing you, looking at your face at all time, which allows them to get what they call a dynamic perspective. Which redraws 3D images at 60 frames per second. And basically what it does is it does dynamic head tracking. So when you move, and we've talked about this before, but I'm going to go over it again because it's what I do. There's two aspects of 3D, of depth sensing as humans. One aspect of it is depth sensing, which is what you get from having two eyes. The bifocal perspective allows you to see two sides of something, and your brain processes that as depth. So traditionally, 3D movies, what they do is they give you a sense of depth and speed through depth by giving you two different images, one through each eye, and there's a number of different technologies you can use to do that, whether they're with glasses or with the Oculus or glasses-free like the Nintendo DS. This is none of that. This is actually a different, the other half of 3D, which is perspective, which is to say, when you look at, like, if you're standing back at something and there's things at different depths, if you move, you can see things behind it or you can see around it. And as your perspective shifts, the image shifts. And what
basically
they're doing
extreme parallax.
Yes, exactly. Parallaxing is the technical term for that effect. And devices like the Oculus Rift, why it's such a, you know, astounding experience is because not only does it do two different images to the eyes, which gives you the stereotopic vision, gives you the two images, one for each eye, which gives you the depth, but it also does head tracking, which gives you perspective or the parallax effect. You put those two together and you get a full-blown 3D environment. This only does one of those two things. But what's cool is that it's actually the easier of the two to do with a lot of clarity nowadays, because it allows you to get a really high-quality screen, and it just takes a bit of processing power to do head tracking. And I've wanted to see something like this for a while, and it's pretty cool. I look forward to seeing it. I think people are going to be crazy impressed when they pick it up.
Really?
Yeah, I think they're going to be really, having not actually played with myself and not hearing a lot about overall performance, I think people are going to be really shocked by what it looks like. And I think it's going to be a bigger selling point than you want to admit, because it's sort of like the scrolling on the original iPhone. When iOS first came out with the little, like, the Snap 2 and everything.
Yeah,
like,
the rubber band effect.
The rubber band effect. That is not a selling feature because it doesn't do anything. It just is a cool look, and yet it sold iPhones like crazy because it was cool and it was interesting and it was fun to look at. And I think that this will actually help catch people's attention, even though it's not a long-term, it's not a really fundamental technology. The other thing that's going on here is I think Apple's been working on this. I think Apple's in their labs has got builds of iOS that do exactly this. For whatever reason, they have decided to not move forward with it, but I think that was the direction they were going, and I think that's clearly obvious with the whole parallax and shifting dynamic background effect that you have with iOS 7. Like, it's a similar attempt to do that, to give you a sense of depth and space within
the
screen.
By the way, I'm kind of bummed that you can't create your own dynamic background on the iPhone. I'm really hoping iOS 8 they introduce that ability.
Me too, because, you know, it's
bubbles
nice,
are cool,
but it's...
But yeah. Come on. Let me do my own stuff.
Exactly. Well, that's classic Apple.
They'll do it. They'll do it. It's just a matter of time.
They'll get around to it eventually, especially now that you know you've got this to compete against. But I think
Apple does have the parallax thing, which is, you know, it's not much, right? We're talking pixels. I'm going to guess that this is significantly more. Right? So do you think? So my question is: do you have to have the cameras in order to do it? Because obviously Apple doesn't. Okay. They just use the whatever.
It sounds like one of those things where with one camera you can do it, but it's because there have been apps that do this for a long time. Like, I remember when the first iPad came out, they were building apps. Well, I guess it was the second one because the first one didn't have a front-facing. No, first one only had a front-facing camera. Yeah, I think it was the first. No, it was either the first or second generation iPad. So it's been 3 or 4 years that Apple, you can download apps that do exactly that. It does eye tracking and stuff, and it allows you to get that effect with the iPhone. It's cool. It's fun. Okay. Nobody did anything with it, but, you know, really. But you can do it with one camera. It's easier with two cameras. It's easier with three cameras. The more cameras you put on somebody's face, two things happen. The quality of the camera that you require goes down, and the speed at which you can render these types of images and figure out where the head is goes down. So the more cameras
you have... What it sounds like with Amazon, they actually only use two of the cameras. They just try to determine which are the best two to use, given the situation you're in.
Right. Right.
That way, I mean, that way it works in more situations than not. It's almost redundant in that in that regard, but in a good way.
Yeah, right. Because your hand can be covering a camera or something, depending on how you're holding it. So there's all sorts of stuff that. Yeah, so it's one of those things where I think people will like it. I think things like tilt the scroll and stuff are going to be, you know, I think they're going to go over about as well as they went over with Samsung, which is to say they'll be kind of cool, but people won't use it a lot. I think there are things that come along with, you know, really high quality, you know, eye tracking, facial recognition stuff that will become, you know, for people who use the phone, that it'll become instrumental. You won't be able to get away with it. I think that being able to track the person is important. And I just, what they've done is they've opened up a new playground. They've opened up a new canvas, and I'm excited to see what developers do with it. And I think they are too. But I think that what they are really excited about, they also included Mayday. That was another big selling point, which is their personalized, you know, help that you can, you know, queue up on the fly, which is a pretty cool feature. But the last one, and this one's the big, I think the biggest deal, really and truly, is the new feature called Firefly.
Well, I would say this last one, second to last one, but go ahead.
You what?
I would call that the second to last big one.
What do you think
there's
the big one?
There's another big one in there. The unlimited photo storage.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. The year of Amazon Fire with the unlimited photo storage. Yeah, so Firefly is basically it's an auto detect thing. It's Spotify for your world.
Yeah, I wonder how well that's going to work, because they actually had an app for that on the iPhone that I downloaded, and it worked okay. It was accurate about 60% of the time. Hmm.
I got a feeling that they've gone really far out of their way to try to make it as great as possible, but yeah, it'll be interesting.
Probably.
It'll be interesting. I've heard a lot of people complain about the fact that there are three pieces of information that are primary pieces of information that are collected every time you use it. Sound, photo, a sound snippet, a photo, and your geolocation.
Yeah.
Try to help you, to help it, you know, figure out what you're looking at. And that bothers privacy advocates. Oh, I wonder why.
Naturally. Don't buy the phone. Come on. You've given Amazon everything else about you. Come on.
Yeah.
They know your purchase history. Please.
Yeah. They're describing... Yeah, right. Exactly. They know everything you've bought. They're describing this as like it's the world's greatest barcode scanner, right? Because you just point at anything and they'll tell you information about it. And specifically stuff that you can buy it on Amazon. I think Google is going to come out with a similar feature to this that'll be integrated to the Google Store, but it'll be a more general Google search type thing.
It's Google Goggles, isn't it? Doesn't it already have that?
I guess technically. Google Goggles.
And then they can integrate that into Google Glass, and I think that's where that gets powerful real quick.
Right. So I don't know. I think it's one of those things that's a cool feature. It all depends on its performance. You know, how well does it work? They claim it works well, but that was in a highly controlled environment. But as somebody who, you know, it's funny. I don't search for songs anymore, generally speaking. I even if I'm like, if it's a friend who's playing a song and I know the name of the song, I say, hey, who does this? Oh, this is what's a good example? You're like, this is Sam Smith, and this is his new song. Whatever, it doesn't matter. And this is a new song. Blah blah blah. I'm not gonna go into iTunes and search for it. I'm gonna say, play that song again, and I'm gonna bust up in Spotify and go that way. I like that feature because that's how what I do with sounds, with music, and I could see doing that with Amazon stuff as well. My problem is that I don't buy TV shows, I don't buy movies, I don't buy music from Amazon. I buy books generally, and some different pieces of hardware and stuff. But I could see using it. I'd like it as an app, but I know my problem. I'm not going to buy this phone. I'm just not going to buy this phone. It's not going to happen. But
I like the rubber bumpers on it. I like that part.
The what?
The rubber bumpers that are built into the phone. So if you drop it on its side, it just hits the rubber. I like that feature.
I do like that feature.
That would almost keep me from putting on a case with that feature.
Yeah. As you said, the other big one is unlimited photo storage. So that's a big deal too. And then, you know.
Yeah, which is nice because no one else really offers that, and they've got the space. You know, the way I think about this is like, competition's awesome. It's great.
Yeah.
I ultimately don't think that Amazon is going to sell a bunch of these phones, despite the platform for which they can advertise them, aka Amazon.com. And mostly because you look at how many Kindle Fires they've sold, and you're like, well, we don't know any exact numbers, but you get the sense that they're not the majority out there.
Right.
And I get the feeling that that'll happen with the phone too. But what's nice about this is that they've focused in a few areas that I think will cause other companies to look at it. You know, like with Google, there's no reason why they can't offer unlimited photo storage. They should,
yeah.
Or at least make it crazy, right? Yahoo with Flickr offers 1 terabyte of photo storage. Do something like that. You're like, yeah, don't worry about it. Yeah, sure, it's technically limited, but don't worry about it. Which I bet you Amazon's is too, if you start to read the fine print.
Yeah.
And you know, so they're going to push people on that. They're going to push people on this dynamic perspective. They're going to be interested in that. They're going to push, like you're talking about, Google on image recognition. And so I look at it as they're probably not going to come to dominate, but they're going to push all the other companies, and by all the others, it's really Google, Samsung, and Apple to maybe Microsoft, maybe, but you know, whatever. To improve their phone offerings, because they're picking on those little things that aren't, you know, that could be better, and saying, boom, here's how to do them better. And
yeah.
The companies will respond. It'll be cool.
Yeah, and it sounds like they've done it in a way that's, you know, that's really powerful and really well done. And I'm definitely excited about it. I'm most excited to see the perspective thing, the dynamic perspective. I think it'll be cool, and I think it'll be powerful, and I think they'll come out with cool games. And it's way too expensive to buy as a fun device, but if it weren't, you know.
Yeah, what would be really interesting, though, is actually like suddenly watching like movies and TV shows. It'll feel flat if you've been looking at the dynamic perspective.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Unless they come up with dynamic movies.
Could you do that? Is that possible?
Well, no, not really. Not live action movies. It'd have to be 3D. It'd have to be stuff that's rendered on the fly.
Oh, man. Sounds intense.
It is intense, but it'd be really cool.
Well, I could see where you could film stuff in with two cameras, and then that would just determine your angle. Like how, you know, if you just...
You could have...
Once you turn it too far, it just stops. You know what I mean? And you get a little bit there.
Yeah. You'd still have to do a tremendous amount of processing in order to get...
That's true.
It's seamless. But yeah, you could do something. You could do minor adjustments with a camera array, I think. And some heavy graphicking stuff. But yeah, I mean, it's cool. There's potential here. There's definitely potential here. But I like it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm excited to see them. I'm excited to play with one. And I read an article this week that said that there was a dude claiming that he thinks that the Kindle, he bought a Kindle Paperwhite, and he bought it from a company who opens the package for you, takes it out, unboxes it, opens the device up, and then waterproofs it, puts it all back together, and then ships it to you, and you pay like an extra $100 for the pleasure. But they like waterproof it up to like 200 meters submerged. So the dude was like, yeah, like I read in my shower now with my Paperwhite. What? But he was just like, he goes, I mean, it's perfected reading in his opinion. And okay. I see where you're going with this. That's not a terrible argument to make. You know, and I guess my point in that is to say that Amazon is capable of making some pretty good technology. The problem that they're having with the Kindle Fire is that there's just great competition out there, and they haven't done anything that's really revolutionary, that's really enough to pull people away from, you know, their very good technology, you know, anything to pull people towards that away from Apple's great technology. But I think that this is, you know, this is the right direction. I really like it from the – my gut is that it's not going to kill anybody. It's not going to knock out Amazon, or it's not going to knock out Samsung. But it's a great first place to step. And like you said, they're taking on some big tech – they're taking on things, and they're actually finding areas to to make some disruptive changes to. And maybe this phone won't be, won't be gangbusters, but neither was the first iPhone, really and truly. You know, they need to do is...
What do you mean by that?
Well, I mean, I think there was a lot of mind share that the original iPhone got, even though it didn't get a lot of market share. And it wasn't until you got really to the 3GS that it started to really, you know, disrupt Palm and BlackBerry. And so do I think that's going to happen in 3 years with the Amazon phone? Probably not, but it's the right place to start. You know, it's not a non-starter. It's actually a big deal. It looks like a good piece of technology, and I think that they're heading in a direction that has some serious potential. You know, how they execute and iterate on that will be very, very important. But you know, it's a good first step. It's a good first step. You know, it's not nothing. But
yeah, I'm with you there. Totally are. Totally am.
Yeah. So.
Cool. Just letting it simmer for a little bit here. Let's see here. We got a couple other smaller stories. Let's talk about those.
All right.
So, I care about this one because I actually use the service all the time. Dwolla. We've talked about this, I think.
Dwolla.
Dwolla is a payment network, and think of it similar to PayPal.
Okay.
I think that's how I would describe it. Yeah, so the idea is I sign up for Dwolla, you sign up for Dwolla. We link our bank accounts, doing the classic, they're going to insert a couple pennies, you know, they'll do a couple transactions, and you verify those transactions. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
We've done that, and then boom, they're linked, which means I can now send and receive monies from anybody who also has a Dwolla account. So we use it for collecting rent. It's perfect for landlords because it only costs 25 cents per transaction, which is a pretty good deal if you think about it. The problem I run into with like Square and other stuff, which I totally would use, is that they're like 25 cents plus, you know, like 1.2%. And that actually starts to add up to money when you are talking in the hundreds of dollars.
Right.
And, you know, and I'm just cheap enough where I'm like, nah, I'm good. But 25 cents, I'm in. So, but the way that it's worked is when we get a new resident, I'll tell them, like, because the whole you got to, you know, link your account and that takes those 3 to 4 business days, I'm like, don't wait until the first. Do it ahead of time. Do it right now.
Yeah.
So that when the first comes, you can do it. And it's got some cool features where you can schedule payments and whatever. So that's what the other thing I do. I just set them up on a regular schedule, and then the money just flows. It's kind of nice.
the spice will flow.
Yeah, but the issue is they got to sign up for the account, which is, you know, it's a small barrier, but it's a barrier. And so Dwolla is improving upon that. They've created a new service called Dwolla Direct, which I don't actually think it deserves a new name, to be totally honest with you. I think that's just, it's now better. And so they're now setting it up very similar to the way Mint will pull your account information. So let's say you want to link your account. They've now got it where they ask you, well, which account is it? And they give you a list of options. And then you just type in your username and password to your bank account, and it creates a secure connection, verifies that it's you, and you're done.
Nice.
In like 30 seconds. You don't have to do the whole deposit thing, don't have to wait it out, blah, blah, blah. It's linked, and then you're good to go. And obviously, if they don't have your site, you can do it the old way, where you input your account number and router number, and they'll, you know, take 3-4 business days to do it. You know, just in case they don't have your particular bank account. But that's just cool. I'm a fan of Dwolla and what they're doing. I think for some small business owners, especially ones where you have these recurring payments, man, they're totally reasonably priced. It's easy to work through. I have like a page, I guess, and so when we have a new resident, I just send them an email with a link to it and go, here I am. sign up. You know, and that'll be even...
Pay me.
Now, this is the kind of thing where I can actually sit there over their computer and sign them up with me sitting there instead of me being like, oh, I'll come back in 3 to 4 days, or you know what I mean?
Right.
So I think it's cool. The payment space continues to show innovation. I think some of the stuff Dwolla's doing is good. They actually have a real business model, which I also like. And
yeah, those two things are good. Those are good signs.
Yeah. So yeah, I just want to share my short little love fest with you of Dwolla.
Nice. Speaking of companies with a business model and a plan for the future, Harley kind of surprised everybody this week. Harley Davidson Motorcycle Company, which I got a feeling that we probably have motorcycle fans in our audience. There's a pretty good cross section between, you know, cars, motorcycles, and silicon fans, high tech fans, and Harley Davidson has been. It looks like they've had their eye on the Wizard of. I got to come up with some new nickname for Elon Musk. I wonder because what was Tesla Wizard. I can't remember. Okay, I'm going to work on this. I'll work on it later. But basically, they've had their eye on Tesla, and they've come out with an electric motorcycle.
Wow.
Yeah. They're Harley trades V-Twin Rumble for the electric line and its shocking Livewire e-bike.
Which looks sweet.
Yeah. So there's been a couple of people that have been out there, you know, trying to get into that game a little bit on the side, and everybody kind of figured it would be somewhere like Honda or Yamaha or somebody maybe even like Ducati, but no, it's the ever-prevalent Harley-Davidson company, which is cool because one of the things that they've always gotten discredited for is being sort of a low-tech company. They've always been kind of like, you know, viewed as the very simple, you know, mechanics, and they're relatively easy to work on. All choppers were Harleys because Harleys were simple, and you could chop them up and you could bend and break them and put them back together, and they would run. And they weren't the fastest, they weren't the meanest, they weren't the most efficient, but they were good. And I think unfairly, especially in the last decade, Harley's kind of had that as a persistent part of their image. Even as you get some beastly bikes coming about, like the V-Rod, which is the fastest stock motorcycle that you can buy for the 100 meter or the quarter mile. I mean it's just a viciously fast bike stock, and they've come out with cool stuff with, you know, like in California there's all sorts of crazy regulations where motorcycles need to be air cooled now and stuff, and things that are really disrupting the classic Harley design aesthetic. And they've come through in spades in designing them in such a way that they are environmentally friendly, they're way more efficient, and are still very cool and got the cool rumble and everything. And they've really been pushing their innovation and technology forward, and it looks like they're going to continue down that path with this new electric vehicle. So the thing's kind of a beast, which if you're going to get a motor Harley, that's what you want. Thing's got 74 horsepower, 52 foot-pounds of torque. They're speculating it's a 10 kilowatt hour battery pack, so, you know, pretty nice.
Looks nice.
Yeah, it looks really, really cool. They say at this point it's only got a 50-ish mile range. They think they can pretty easily get it up to like 100 mile range, which for a motorcycle is, you know, not bad. Obviously, like, you know, one of the perks of the motorcycle, one of the big selling points of a motorcycle in general, even with the Harleys that are ridiculously expensive, is that it's $5 to fill up your tank and you'll go, you know, 150 miles on it. But you fill up the tank every 150 miles, and it's very, very cheap. It's the dollar per mile ratio on a motorcycles are way super low, because they're so dang light. And this guy, its range is comparable. So if you if you're the sort of person that doesn't fill up your motorcycle for, you know, to get to work and back, it'll fit right into that bell horn. But it's not a touring bike because you got to recharge it. And I think that will be a limiting factor. But I do think that there is a certain sect of
That style bike's never been a touring bike either.
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember the typical name for that style. Which I know you probably do, but I still remember.
Far.
Yeah, it's not a touring bike, so it's okay. It's not supposed to go that far.
Yeah, so it's one of those things where I have a good feeling about it. You know, obviously, once again, this is your first product to the market that's really pushing something forward. I think there's a market for it. The kind of person that bought the Roadster, the Tesla Roadster, are going to go out and I think are going to look at this and say, hey, this is cool. I want to be known for this. And the other thing is, you know, obviously the Harleys have always been kind of known for their rumble. But there's definitely a certain group within Harley that's not why they get Harleys. They get Harleys because they're cool for other reasons. They're powerful. Mm-hmm. They're fast. They're beautiful. And in stock, they're not particularly loud. They're actually rather quiet, which is why everybody has aftermarket pipes. And one of the reasons for that is that there are environmental regulations that require the bikes to have certain levels of efficiencies, and the stock pipes, which is where you get the loud rumble, are designed for efficiency, which makes them rather quiet because there's a lot of back pressure and stuff and baffles. So they take those off, they, you know, put straight pipes on them, lowers the efficiency, increases the pollution output, but it also makes them loud, which everybody thinks is cool. Not everybody, but you know, certain Harley fans thinks is cool. So it's one of those things where I don't know. I'm excited about it. You know, me, I've always been into the V rods. That's the motorcycle that I want.
Yeah, that's the word. That's what it looks like, a V rod.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a big fan of the V rods.
Dude, you were just talking about the sound. And on here, they said they actually massaged the sound to make it sound like a fighter jet landing on an aircraft carrier.
Oh, that's awesome.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. They know what they're doing. I mean, they're not idiots. They've
you know what you gotta do? Some... You gotta, like, well, I guess it's just a one-person rider, huh? I was like, you gotta, like, get our dad to go test drive one so you can go check it out.
I don't know. I should get my motorcycle's license. I'm old enough now where a dad can't stop us.
It's true.
He'll tell me not to, but at least I can test drive these things then at that point. Yeah. Oh man, it's a cool looking bike. I want one. But I'm sure it's going to be ridiculously expensive. There's no talk on price that I can see.
Makes sense.
But yeah, I'm sure we'll hear more about this specifically from me as time goes on. But for now,
we've talked about getting a little like a moped type thing, which is obviously different.
But, yeah, you know, it's a little different, James. I'm not sure it's quite the same ballpark, but.
The problem I live in is that I do live in Oregon. So the problem I have is I live in Oregon where it rains and you get wet in the rain if you're not covered. So but I do like it.
And you're going to be on an electric motorcycle. Yeah, it seems, you know, rain could be a problem. I'm sure it's not a problem. I'm sure the thing's more waterproof than a waterproof Kindle. So the last story, well, last-ish story that I want to bring to you tonight is so Google decided to go full-on invasion of privacy. They know where you live. They know what you buy. They know the ridiculous sites that you go to. They know what videos you watch. They know they know what temperature you like to keep your room. They know who you talk to. They know what phone calls you make. And now they're just going to straight up watch you in your home. Google did what they had been rumored to do, and they bought Dropcam.
Wow!
So Dropcam obviously is a.
I like Dropcam.
I know. I actually like it too, and I think people are making a big deal out of stuff that you don't necessarily need to make a big deal out of. But it is interesting. So Dropcam obviously is a security camera. It's got a service where you pay them some money and they will store the video for $10 to $30 per month, depending on how long you want the archives kept. It's $149 to $190, depending on video quality. It requires little to no effort to maintain. You plug it in, get it up on your Wi-Fi, and you're set. If you just want to be able to check in on your camera remotely, yeah, that's free. And so, yeah, it's a cool little security camera device. I think it's an affordable way to go. And as part of your holistic home stuff, I think it's an instrumental part in figuring out where that data should be kept, who should have a view of it, and stuff like that. Is, you know, should it be the NSA? Should it be Google? Should it be Apple? Those are difficult questions to ask. And but the things that we have to figure out, because I think camera and more specifically people tracking within the home environment is going to be instrumental to the future of home automation. Knowing where people are and who's there helps you manage lights and sound and water and all sorts of cool things. And, you know, that starts with the cameras, and it starts with, you know, a number of other sensors, but cameras are important ones. I think it makes a lot of sense for Google to get into that game, and especially with an incumbent that is as prolific as Dropcam. At the same time, you know, asking the question of, do I want them to have that data, is not a ridiculous question to ask, because, you know, you're giving people an awful lot of control over what they see of your private life, you know, by doing that. And, oh, are you going to get Dropcam?
Oh, man, I think about it all the time. So $10 to $30, man, a month. That's not.
You know what
cheap.
I really want? I really want a service that allows me to store the video locally. I want a device that is exactly like Dropcam. It goes over Wi-Fi, but it only, you know, it's the IP address it's looking for is my server, my you know, Wi-Fi enabled hard drives. I don't like the fact that it's stored on other cameras.
I feel like you should be able to do that. If it's, you can check in on your cameras remotely all by yourself, that's free.
Yeah.
What is if this then that? Do they have a drop cam thing?
I don't know.
Let's see here. Channels. Vlogger, Boxcar, Buffer, Delicious, Dig, Dropbox, no drop cam. Yeah, you know, I understand what you're saying there. You know, if they made it, man, if it were $1 a month, I'd probably go for it. $10 a year, that kind of thing. That'd be worth it to me just for the week. The other issue, because I'm instantly thinking, like, for rentals, right? That's my, where I don't know, in my house it would be kind of cool, too, to be able to, like, where's my dog at? That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah.
Since I have Wi-Fi here. In the rentals, it wouldn't work because I don't have Wi-Fi, so. You know, residents do. I don't. But yeah, it's a cool idea. I like it. I think it is the hardware itself is reasonably priced for what it does. It's the $10 to $30 a month, man.
Yeah.
Because for $10, it gets you a week of archives. For $30, it gets you an entire month.
Well, and I think the whole point of that is, you know, it allows you to. If you get a break in, you can.
Yep, review, you know, it.
But yeah, I don't know. I think it's an interesting thing to watch. I don't know what they're going to do with it. You know, obviously, the nicest part about Google taking a company like that over is all of a sudden you get the Google servers, and
yeah.
The blessing and curse that comes with that is that Google gets access to your data, but you get the power of the Google servers, which are ridiculous and fast and robust and, you know, dependable. So, I don't know.
I could see where they start to. You could potentially do some interesting things with that, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, and especially if they can start to get things to talk to each other, like the Nest Protect and Thermostat. And, you know, it's like with the. For example, the thermostat, you know, it's got a camera in it, I guess, and, you know, to try to determine if you're home or not, and it could get even more precise, you know, where it can look around the room now and see where you're at. That could be interesting. There's also too, I'm thinking like, you know, if they, I also think like with Nest, if they know where your phone is at, and they can start to really like, hey, you know what, he's not home. Let's really, you know, we can take the weather down, or you know, or take the temperature down. No big deal. Or yeah. We know you're not home, therefore we're gonna record and keep it. If you're home, we don't care as much, or something. You know, we can, because you're there, or something. I don't know. I feel like there's some interesting synergistic things that can happen. You also do get the feeling that Google's just starting down that path of the Internet of Things, and light bulbs are next, and they're just going to keep buying little pieces of your home.
I do think that that's current Google's current strategy. I would completely agree with that assessment, that's what this is about as far as they're concerned. There isn't necessarily a specific strategy other than there are elements that they think are important, and they want to either develop or own those pieces, so that eventually when you do build a holistic home automation, you know, you Google offers a one-stop shop with all of that.
You know, that's cool.
So yeah. I like it. I'm sure in a couple of weeks we'll be talking about the iWatch and the beginnings of their PR campaign. The PR machine has begun, but it's not necessarily worth the time tonight.
I would agree. All right, man. Cool conversation.
Definitely.
A lot of stuff, man. I like it.
Yeah.
Thanks to Facebook, Amazon, Yo, Snapchat. There's some good stuff going on. I like it. All right, everybody. I got to pull this up. Is that the one I want? Yep, that's what I want. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. My name is James Furlow, and my football fan brother is Matthew Furlow. And so we will talk next time. Thank you.